Good afternoon, members. We'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. The first order of business will be approval of the minutes dated March 8th. Representative Myra moves approval of those minutes. Any discussion, changes, corrections, or additions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. The first item on our agenda today is Representative McFarland, House File 535. Representative McFarland, we're going to hold off on moving the bill. In the meantime, though, please go ahead and proceed with your testimony. Do you have any amendments, Representative McFarland?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I have a lead all, number one, DE1.
All right, why don't you discuss the amendment before we move the bill or move the amendment?
Well, I won't go into detail on it right now. What I want to tell you about is the process that we've been going through. Would you like me to talk about the bill? Since this is a delete-all?
My recommendation would be that you discuss the delete-all, Representative McFarland, but if you think it's important to discuss the bill before it's amended, you're the author.
The essence of the bill has remained the same from one to the other. The wording has changed and more detail has happened in the delete-all. So.
Okay. Well, Representative McFarland, you frame the bill exactly the way you want, and then the members of the committee will tell you why you're either right or wrong.
Okay. First of all, I want to remind members that, because you don't have a quorum to have the bill heard anyway, right?
Well, Representative McFarland, we will be moving that bill. We'll be moving that bill today, and we'll be laying it over for possible inclusion in a later bill. We're just not going to be doing it right at this time.
Okay, thank you. Minnesota mandates since beginning of January 1st of 2000 that districts shall ask for reimbursement for third parties. This legislation will help to streamline the medical assistance billing process for school districts providing health-related services that are part of the IEP, individual education plans. It's important that we find ways to make the billing process more streamlined so that school districts are not unnecessarily paying for medical assistance, eligible health care services out of education dollars. On February 28th, about a dozen stakeholders came together and met with myself and Ms. Larson, who's here today, to work on together to craft the delete all amendment that we have before us today. And I wanted to comment that those that were in attendance at the meeting were representatives from MASE, AMSD, Minnesota School Board Association, MREA, St. Paul's Schools, Minneapolis Schools, and Intermediate School Districts. After reviewing all of this, we also sent it to the governor's office, to DHS, and to MDE for comment. And I also want, well, I'm kind of going just on if that's okay.
It's your bill, Representative McFarland.
Thank you. I just wanted to especially thank Deputy Commissioner Scott Lights from DHS because he has come to meet with me twice about this important legislation. And because of the work that we've been able to do, I think that we have some consensus on quite a few things that are parts of this bill. And I was wondering if Ms. Larson would maybe go through the sections because she's really in tune to this after sitting with us for about an hour and a half going through the
crafting. First of all, the chair will move House File 535 for possible inclusion in a later bill, and the chair will also move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the form that the author would like. Ms. Larson, did you want to discuss the DE1 amendment or walk through the sections of that?
Mr. Chairman, members, with respect to the H-535 DE1 amendment, there are actually only a couple of substantive changes, even though there are a number of sections here. One of them, which begins on page 1, has to do with notices to child's parent or legal representative. The way this is set up is that there is initial notice and then there are ongoing notices. And the point of both these notices essentially is to say that is to, number one, ask for consent to disclose information about health-related services provided to the child to a third-party payer so that the provider can be reimbursed, but also to indicate to the parent that it's possible to withdraw consent for disclosing that information and that in doing so there is no consequence to either the child or the parent with respect to eligibility for Minnesota care or medical assistance. And there's a requirement not only that this be the case, but that the parent be given a statement to this effect. And if you look on page 2, there is more language that is consistent with this whole notion about providing consent, about the ability to withdraw consent, and about the fact that if consent is withdrawn, there is no consequence in terms of eligibility. In the middle of page 2, you'll see language, and there is a very small technical amendment. It's H0535A1. It has just two changes on it, and one of them pertains to the paragraph that appears on 2.13 and following. On 2.14, it deletes department and inserts district. So there's a direction to the district, which has the responsibility for serving the child, to ensure that the parent of the child receiving the services has notice in understandable language of federal and state procedural safeguards. And this would be with respect to data specifically. The changes on page 3 are consistent with exactly what I've just described. And as are the changes on pages 4. And then on page 5, there is language that directs the Commissioner of Human Services, after consulting with the Commissioner of Education, to include on all the Minnesota Healthcare Program application forms, as they are reviewed, revised, and replaced, an authorization for this consent that would allow a district or other provider of these covered services to release information in a child's record to the commissioner so that the provider can be reimbursed. And there is a further requirement that this authorization must conform with federal data practices law governing access to non-public data in a child's record. And as we've indicated earlier, that it's possible for the parent to withdraw consent at any time without any consequence. And then finally, in Section 6, on page 5 of the bill, this is consistent with the effort to streamline recovery of the costs. There is a direction to the Commissioner of Human Services to summarize and document district efforts to seek reimbursement from third-party payers, and then to request both initial and continuing waivers from the federal government of a requirement that districts must first seek payment from a student's private health plan on the basis that this is not a cost-effective strategy. There's language at the bottom of 5 and on to page 6 saying that the waiver request must seek permission for the commissioner to allow districts to bill Medicaid alone without first billing private payers in those cases when a child has both public and private coverage. And then finally, if the waiver is not, an ongoing waiver is not granted, the Commissioner of Human Services is directed to seek permission on a time-limited basis so that the permission or the waiver could be renewed as needed.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. To the DE1 amendment, any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The DE1 amendment is adopted. Representative McFarland, is the A1 amendment yours as well?
No, but I do have an oral amendment to the D1, if I could.
All right, Representative McFarland, if you want to let us know what that is, and I'll move that amendment for you.
Okay. The amendment is that on line 2.14, delete the word department and add the word district.
Yeah.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
So both those changes are in the A1 amendment, Representative McFarland?
I guess so.
The chair will move the A1 amendment. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative McFarland, the bill is now in the format that you would like.
Thank you.
To your testimony and to the your testifiers.
Okay. With the A1 amendment, I now have a word from the Department of Education that they approve of the language in this bill, so I just wanted to bring that forward, that they're happy with that. Also, I wanted to mention that In conversation with DHS, Section 6 is something that they will be able to do by doing a letter annually, and I think they may want to speak on that, but I think we came to an agreement on that. So anyway, they may want to come and testify later. But first I'd like to introduce Kay Dole and to speak on this.
Hi, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Catherine Dole, and I'm from Minneapolis Public Schools. And Mr. Chair and representatives, thank you for the opportunity to speak on this issue. As you know, Minnesota required school districts to seek reimbursement for services provided to special education students. And so we're here very happily and eagerly supporting this bill because we see that these federal flow-through dollars that have no cost to Minnesota taxpayers are very important to our school districts, and we want to be able to access these dollars, certainly in a time when revenue for schools is very significantly needed. So we certainly support the bill. We think that this bill will improve the process, and it will help us access these federal dollars and help us provide services to our students. And we think that this will streamline the process for schools and remove some of the excessive paperwork that we have to do to maintain and follow up with the laws that we're required to follow here in Minnesota.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if anybody else would like to speak from the audience.
Sure. Members of the public, this is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify either for the bill or have concerns about the bill? Seeing no testimony, looks like that'll conclude our public testimony. Questions for Representative McFarland and her testifier? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative McFarland, thank you for bringing this forward. I know that we were on the same bill last year and with Representative Will Morgan, and you know, it's a very critical, important bill, as your testifier indicated as well. You know, there's many districts that, because of the cumbersome process right now, don't even bother putting in for third-party billing for their services that would so greatly impact and help all school districts in the state of Minnesota. So thank you very much for bringing this forward. I have two questions just to show the hopefully show the impact of this. And Representative McFarland, I don't know if you or I know these answers. We might have to rely on Mr. Stroh and Mr. Stroh over here. But so the question is this. Wait a minute, Representative McFarland, my question's right here somewhere. So, do we know the number of districts that are, excuse me, do we know the number of dollars that are not being recouped to school districts in the state of Minnesota due to the cumbersome process?
I'm not sure.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Ward, I have just the opposite right now, and then maybe somebody else could answer the rest of it. Back in the school year 2000-2001, only 77 school districts participated, and we brought in statewide federal dollars of $541,000. In 2009-2010, we had 319 districts that were participating, and it brought in over $34 million.
Representative Ward.
So, Representative McFarland, so if I heard you correctly, we jumped from 70-some to 300-some, and significant increase. But there still are some districts that, you know, still are not, that was the second part of my question, not just dollars, but how many school districts are not participating. And I think we have around 343 school districts in the state of Minnesota, somewhere in that nature. So there are still districts, you know, that just don't have the labor to be able to do the cumbersome process. And so, again, thank you for bringing the bill forward. It is revenue that our schools and our children so greatly need. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative McFarland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also want to note that some of our districts are having difficulty getting the parents to understand what this is about, too. And so there are sometimes language and cultural barriers that parents don't participate to the full extent that we could in our school districts. So I think that would be wise to have.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Like Representative Ward, I want to thank Representative McFarland, and it's terrible that we didn't pass this last year because we had no no education bill, but I'm really glad you picked it up and that all the good people who worked on it are here, and thanks to them as well. And I know you and worked with Representative Morgan, so it's always good to work bipartisanly in case things flip, and then we can carry on with the bills that are good ones like this one. So thank you very much. And I am really hopeful that this will finally work. This was my bill way back in the day when it first passed, and we've always had foot dragging from the Department of Health and Human Services, some of whom are here and they know who they are. And so we'll all be watching this one. We've been missing out on this money for a heck of a long time, and our students need every drop of funding that they can get. And so we need the bill to pass, and we need it to work, and we need no foot dragging. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, if I could comment on that.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would say that this has been a real cooperative. I thank you for the work that's been done before and the continuation to meet with the people that we did and really sit down and brainstorm things really worked well. And I think that the Department of Human Services is definitely interested in working with us, and I think we can do that. Thank you.
Do you have another question, Representative Quam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do want to, say that I very much appreciate what this bill is doing, and having been involved in special ed program and funding, I know how this will really help. I did have one question, and does this have any impact on the families if there's a deductible or a ceiling with their medical?
No.
Okay.
That would be the answer. No. These dollars are separate, and so it does not impact their other funding in any way.
Okay. Any other questions? Is there any other testimony either for or in opposition of this bill? All right, then. Okay, we're going to lay this over then, Representative McFarland.
I appreciate it.
Inclusion in a later bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Oh. Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House File 782 for possible inclusion in a later bill.
Thank you, Chairman. Garofalo, do you want to make your presentation now?
Thank you. First, Madam Chair, I would request that Mr. Crow and or Mr. Strom discuss sort of a little bit of the history of the Maximum Effort Capital Loan Program and discuss some of the history behind this, as well as the draft version of the note that we have.
Mr. Strom, Mr. Crow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, in your packet, you've got a little spreadsheet that I think we'll refer to a bit that's labeled Maximum Effort Loan Balances as of December 30th, 2010. You'll also be receiving the draft fiscal note in just a few minutes as well. These items will be helpful to you as I review the history of the Maximum Effort Loan Program. The Maximum Effort Capital Loan Program, if you turn to page 2 of the spreadsheet, you can see that the Fridley School District was the first district in the state to receive one back in 1961. So the program has been with us for 50 years, and the purpose of the program has been relatively unchanged over that time period. Essentially, the name for the program, the Maximum Effort Capital Loan Program, refers to how the program works. The program is the use of state bonds, the bonds that state general obligation bonds, to help local school districts defray their costs of borrowing when they build local school buildings. Essentially, what happens under the Maximum Effort Program is the local school district issues bonds for part of the cost of the building, and the state issues bonds for the other part of the cost of the building. The district then repays their local bonds with their maximum effort tax rate, and for most districts that's currently 28% of tax capacity. And if that amount of tax is sufficient to repay their bonds and has some left over, then the school district submits the excess back to the state to help repay the state's debt. If, on the other hand, the district, after that maximum effort tax rate, does not have any funds left over, then the interest on that maximum effort loan from the state's point of view keeps growing until such time as the loan is canceled or otherwise satisfied. In terms of the maximum effort capital loans, when they were originally created, they had a 30-year time period for how long a district would continue to send funds into the state. That time limit was repealed for a couple of years, so it was unlimited, and then came back at a long time period of 50 years. The more recent capital loans, as you look up and down the spreadsheet, you can see those have a 50-year time period between the year the loan is granted and the year it cancels. A couple other words about the capital loan program. This program is designed essentially to help low-value school districts meet their building needs. It predates the debt service equalization program, and essentially what it intends to do is shift the tax burden among generations within a community. So, for example, if a suburban community, and again, if you'll use one of those first couple on the second page of the spreadsheet, districts like Fridley and South Washington County that got those first couple of loans, what happened is when they had a large number of kids, very large building needs, and relatively small tax base, they didn't have the way to pay for the building locally, so the state assistance was helpful there. As over time, their building needs leveled out or declined, and their pupil population declined. Their tax base was also growing, and they were able to repay those loans. So essentially, what it did is it delayed what would be a very high tax rate for some school districts in current years into a future time period. One other note that's probably helpful to you to know, for most school districts, when they issue building bonds, they're limited to a 20-year bond. So essentially, if the school district can't pay for their building with a 20-year bond, that's when the maximum effort capital loan program helps out. Beginning in the 1990s, the state passed a debt equalization program, and part of the passage of that program was designed to help school districts with low values pay for school buildings. And that program essentially changed the nature of the maximum effort program some, as some districts found it more advantageous to be in the debt service equalization program and not rely on the maximum effort capital loans. In order for a maximum effort capital loan to be approved, the state legislature needs to both approve and currently names those districts. It needs to approve in law the issuance of that maximum effort loan, and then the state sells bonds to provide those bond shares. So now, if you don't mind, we take just a minute to go through the documents, and then we can get to Representative Garofalo and his testifiers. Mm-hmm. As I said, the maximum effort spreadsheet, if you look at two columns here that are going to be real helpful while you think through this, the third to last column says initial loan amount. And this is how much the state's share of the building costs were. So in the case, if you want to scroll down to middle of the page to Farmington, you can see essentially about not quite $9 million, about $8.8 million was the main part of the Farmington principal that they received from the state. Because the Farmington School District has had other building needs since that time and has been paying locally for those, they have not been making repayments on the principal and interest, and so over time that principal in the second to last column has been growing, and you can see in the second and the second to last column is for December 15th, 2010, the total estimated principal and interest owed, and then the estimate for 2011 for June of 2011 as well. So this gives you some sense of those amounts that are outstanding. You can also look down that second to last column and see those districts that have either paid off or otherwise had their capital loans satisfied. One other thing is, if you look at those expiration dates, you'll see that there's a number of those districts where the loan cancels if it's not repaid is coming in the next few years here. There's a cluster of those that are going to happen in the next couple of years. There's also a draft fiscal note in your packets that says preliminary at the top, and then in the upper left-hand corner, 782-1A. And this is the Department of Management and Budget's best guess as to the repayment that would occur if Representative Garofalo's bill were to go through. And essentially, if I may, just one more minute here, essentially the purpose of Representative Garofalo's bill is to allow school districts that have their maximum effort loans to repay the principal on those loans, both to satisfy their obligation and to return substantial dollars to the state in the meantime. And you can see from the draft fiscal note on the cover of that that the department's early guess is about $28 million would be repaid in fiscal year 12 if the language in the amendment to House File 782 were to be approved.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. I'd like to take a moment and recognize St. Louis Park High School students. Would you please rise? Welcome to the Education Finance Committee. Chairman Garofalo, continue with your presentation, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have some highly respected individuals from multiple school districts here who wish to testify on House File 782, so I'll let them commence being their testimony.
Please introduce yourself.
Jeff Priest, Finance Director for Farmington School District.
Brett Meeks, Superintendent of Farmington School District.
Would you mind spelling your names, please?
Go ahead. Priest, P-R-I-E-S-S. That was Jeff.
Thank you.
And Meeks, M-E-E-K-S.
Proceed.
Thank you. I think that you, you know, just got some of the background information that I wanted to share. But Farmington School District received the capital loan in 1991 about $8.8 million. Because of our debt structure in the district, and I believe that we've got the second high, I think you have that information, we have the second highest debt tax rate in the state right behind St. Michael. We've made some very small payments on that initial capital loan. And so the balance, you guys have another spreadsheet, I think, that's you're talking about the balance. It's grown to the average tax rate, our interest rate, has been 5.74%. So that balance on our audited financials, June 30, 2010, has grown to $20.9 million. We know that just the interest expense in 2010 goes on our books. We really have no means to any way to make those payments. Was over $1 million in the last fiscal year. We do know, looking at the amortization schedules of our current bonds, that we probably wouldn't be able to make any kind of payment until the 2028. Be probably 2028, 2029. Would be the first time we could start to make payments. And of course, at that time, the capital loan, the $9 million, has then grown to $42 million. So, we look at this, we've got total debt in place right now, about $263 million. The district's had a lot of growth, done a lot of building over the last probably, say, 10 years. Again, we have no other means to. You can't make these payments. We're just going to see that interest grow each year. Total grows to $42 million. So this would enable us to make payment on that original balance. And, of course, state would have some dollars this year, or I think we're talking about through 2012, from Farmington, you wouldn't see any of those dollars. It'd be a lot more, but you won't see them until 2028.
Thank you for your testimony. Do you want to continue on, Mr. Deeks?
Meeks? I don't really have anything further to offer other than the fact that being able to repay this debt seems to be advantageous to the state and to the school district as well.
Thank you. This is a public meeting. Is there anyone who would like to testify in favor or opposed to this bill? Please state your name for the record.
I'm Marcia Ziegler, Ziegler. I'm superintendent of schools at St. Michael Albertville.
Thank you.
And as you heard from Farmington,
we're the ones ahead of them. So how important it was to Farmington, it is extremely important to our district, which is smaller than Farmington, but has had extreme growth, probably the highest growth of any area in the state in the last 10 years. So we have had in the last 10 years to have bonded ourselves for schools that have been built for over $226 million. So we're just second behind Farmington in that category. Again, this capital loan was taken out prior to my time, back in 91, similar to Farmington. Again, the rate, our rate is, I believe you got a sheet from us that we have kind of a two-part to our $9.8 million, and we've been at 6.5505% and 5.902. So we're at the highest rate, I think, of any school district. The mere facts is, I think it's an opportune time when the state needs money. How people went into the capital loan thinking it was all going to be forgiven, which has happened to some of these that you've seen on, I think, a spreadsheet you were given. The chances of that happening for everybody or having a huge loan to repay is mounting out there, as you heard from Farmington. So I think it's an opportune time when, again, we would have our original loan of 9.9 to pay back to the state, and Farmington has in a time when the state could use the capital back in your budgets.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from members? Mr. Dabney, Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is where we get into the complexities of K-12 education finance and maybe finance in general. It sounds like you all bought more than you can afford. And if you can't, I guess for either the gentleman from Farmington or the superintendent from St. Michael Albertville, if you can't afford to make the monthly payments or the annual payments, it's kind of like with the foreclosure crisis. How can you afford to pay off the whole thing all at once?
Chairman Groff.
I just don't understand this.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, just to clarify. Number one, the maximum after the capital loan program, Representative Klum, can I have you just move for a second so I can see her? Thank you. Representative Dabney, the maximum, the capital effort loan program wasn't working. That's why essentially it's been abolished with the possible exception of few districts that get it in the form of grants. What is happening right now is that when your tax rate is above a certain level, you do not have to pay off that loan. So what happens is over time, interest is accruing, building up on that balance. Now, it's not because no one can afford what they're doing right now. What they're doing is the law says you don't have to pay on it unless you fall below a certain rate. So, for example, and Mr. Strom mentioned, I think the number is 28, Mr. Strom? Yeah, 28%. So if you drop down to 27% in terms of your overall payments on your tax capacity on your debt, that extra increment, that 1%, automatically goes back to the state of Minnesota to pay it off. Now, because growing school districts with lots of rooftops but not a lot of property tax base occurring, when you're building your school districts, you're building your buildings for the future. The way the old program was designed was it was meant to have this generational effect, as Mr. Strom had, where you borrow the money now and then future generations pay it off, because you don't build the school for today, you build it for 20, 30 years from now. And clearly that program didn't work. So what is happening is this debt is stacking up out there. The interest payments on it are stacking up. It's not a matter of no one can afford anything. It's a matter of what the law is right now. And there's a perverse incentive built into the law that other school districts, not Farmington and not St. Michael, but other school districts that actually have tried to keep themselves above the 28% rate by issuing one-day bond sales. So they go to the voters and say, hey, we're going to spend $1.3 million. Now, you can spend the $1.3 million and send it to the state of Minnesota, or we can expand and modify our facilities. So districts have made a point of keeping it above 28%. I'm not implying that our friends that are up here would ever make that choice, but going into the future, it provides year over year as the interest compounds, you're actually providing a perverse incentive to the school districts to spend more money. Now, I can't talk about St. Michael, but I can tell you in Farmington, there's very few transportation corridors that go through there. There's no interstate. It's going to be a lot of rooftops. There's going to need to be more schools before 2028. And so there's going to be this additional effect. And in my opinion, I'm stating my opinion for myself, I don't think Farmington's ever going to pay this loan off because of the incentives that are built into it.
Representative Daphne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It just, the gentleman from Farmington sounded like the guy who can't pay back his mortgage. Is Farmington in statutory operating debt?
Madam Chair, Representative Daphne, no. And it's not a matter of not being able to pay it off. What happens is when you build the school, right now, the maximum effort loan program, if you're above 28%, you don't pay it back. That's one of the reasons why we've basically gotten rid of the program. It doesn't work.
Representative Daphne.
Madam Chair, thank you. Maybe a question for staff. And I unfortunately stepped out of the room to meet with some constituents while you were reviewing the fiscal note. But it seems to me that if I pay off the loan in full now, in the normal world, then the interest that the lender was anticipating as income isn't present for them in the future. Would that be the case for the state in this situation?
Madam Chair, Representative Daphne, yes, that's what the business manager from Farmington mentioned, that is indeed the case, that the state gets the money now on the essentially the principal now, or the alternative is the state waits to see if the principal and the interest will come in. As Representative Garofalo suggested, he thinks in Farmington's case that maybe they'll be building more buildings in the future, and by the expiration date, which is, if you look at the spreadsheet for Farmington, is 2041, that they still won't have their tax rate below 28% because of their building needs. That's really an open question in my mind about whether districts like Farmington and St. Michael will ever repay these loans. My hunch is that as years approach those, they may well. Districts like Netlake and Red Lake, East Central, many of the other districts that have received these loans in the last decade or so are probably not going to see any appreciation in their tax base and almost for sure will never repay their loans at all. It's more an open question with the fast-growing suburban districts, and if Farmington fills up and doesn't need more elementary schools between 2028 and 2041, then it's probably the case that they will repay with all of the outstanding interest. If the composition of the Farmington School District were to change so that they would need new schools or they would do a major remodeling project and up their local debt levy again, then it's possible that they may not repay even as far out into the future as 2041. So in my estimation, it's really a hard number to know whether districts will repay or not. In general, the case with fast-growing suburban districts is that they tend to repay. These districts tend also, however, to have commercial industrial. If you take Lakeville, for example, which was if you turn to the second page and look, let's see, or take a district like Elk River, for example. The Elk River district's growing. They would repay. A district like Farmington's very much probably less like Elk River in terms of the overall growth, but still probably growing. So it's a judgment call about whether they would repay or not, and whether they would build new school buildings in the future or substantially remodel in the future.
Representative Daphne.
Madam Chair, thank you. I mean, it sounds like the faster-growing suburbs could reasonably be expected to repay the money they owe the state. Perhaps St. Michael Albertville will not repay the money they owe the state. And this will, if I'm reading it correctly, would be a $28 million infusion to the state in fiscal 12. And staff is nodding. And a cost later down the line. Which strikes me as another, we spent 8 years kicking the can down the road. And this strikes me as another way that we look for short-term fixes to the detriment of the long-term. And I guess, Representative Garofalo, we've got a debate within the DFL caucus. And the debate is the GOP really going to deliver the all-cuts budget that it promised the voters? And a bunch of my colleagues say, oh yes, they're going to do it, oh yes. You know, Representative Downey isn't going to let them get away without that. I will take this $28 million as proof positive to my belief. You folks have no intent on delivering an all-cuts budget. You're going to go to gimmicks like this. You're going to go to fees. You're going to go to gaming. You're going to go to a bunch of things to bring money in and not present the budget you promised.
Chairman,
and at least I get to win the argument this way. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
Chairman Garofalo.
Madam Chair, and my my friend from Minneapolis, you brought in a lot of secondary, tertiary issues to the conversation. I think we'll bring it back to the maximum effort, the maximum capital loan program. And I think an important point to make is this, because you brought up the analogy of somebody defeasing the bonds and paying it off and stuff. The state of Minnesota is not paying interest on these bonds anymore. The bonds that were issued to these school districts, they paid them off a long time ago. And so to use your analogy, the state of Minnesota is kind of in the loan sharking business right now. Mm-hmm. We're charging interest on debt that we're not paying interest on, but we're charging these school districts for. And again, this is one of the many reasons why this program, for all practical purposes, was taken care of, because it wasn't working. It was providing the wrong incentives. I understand your perspective that somehow the state is giving something away here. We're actually we're getting a benefit out of this, and it's good policy too. We don't want districts being disincentivized from refinancing their loans. But I'll let our other testifiers here, if you and I want to engage in this conversation more, we can, but I'd like to allow the testifiers to chime in if they have any thoughts.
You know, I would just add, you know, you just go back to that, you know, say that we borrowed more than we could pay off. Mm-hmm. Again, we don't have, because we have this, you know, huge amount of bonded debt, $263 million, because we built new schools, our debt tax rate is going to stay well above that 28%, that maximum effort rate. So we don't have a means to pay that off until we get to and that's assuming that we don't issue any more bonded debt. Then it's 2028 when we're going to fall below that 28%, and then we'd be able to make payments. So kicking the can down the road, yeah, but that's way down the road. If nothing happens, then in 2028 we don't issue any more bonds, we'd owe the state $43 million. That's how far that capital loan will have. With that in interest, that's how far that will have grown, or large that will become.
Mr. Meeks?
Yes, I would just like to reiterate the point that the $42 million is assuming nothing changes in Farmington between now and 2028. Based on our recent history, I mean, even going back 20 years when this loan was initiated, we have added several schools. In my 7-plus years of being in Farmington, we've added about 1,100 students in that period of time. And although our enrollment growth has slowed, it is continuing to grow. And we would anticipate it continue to do so once the economy turns around a little bit. But our history tells us we're likely going to issue more debt between now and 2028.
Ms. Ziegler, would you like to make a comment?
Yes, I would agree with the loan shark analogy, because this high of rate is kind of out of the world. I mean, what we would eventually have to pay back on the group of citizens. And like I said, when it was originally taken out in 91, St. Michael Albertville was not in a huge growth mode. It was, you know, a small growth mode. And the public there and everything that I researched, they felt this would be a great way to be able to afford, which was very difficult because we're almost all residential, so it's all on people that are in homes paying their taxes. A way to do it with, everybody thought this was going to be forgiven in 50 years, not be paid back this enormous rate. Well, in the meantime, when I arrived in St. Michael, starting a year or two before I did, in about 99 to 2000, and I came in 2001, we experienced enormous growth. That was a corridor that just boomed with housing developments. And we still have some growth compared to other districts. but it has, you know, subsided with the economy and the recession. However, we have huge fields plotted, ready to go to start building homes again. So the fact, I would believe Farmington might be in very similar conditions when things would change in our economies again and things roll. People will be building houses out on those farmlands that are already tracked, sewer water out there, ready to go. And we're going to have to build more schools again. It wasn't building them above our needs, but if people move into these areas and build homes, the kids are there. We had to build all the schools. That $226 million was in my lifetime now of 10 years. It wasn't fun to keep going back to voters and saying, well, we got to build some more, we got to build some more. And, you know, they use us as the poster child in Wright County when they want to pass operating levies, you name it, because our tax rate is so high for our residents because we literally have no commercial business property. So this is a way of, I think, it does help us. I wouldn't, you know, I'm a pretty truthful person if you get to know me. I wouldn't tell you. It doesn't hurt. It helps us, but it does help the state, too, because you're gambling. Are we going to have to pay it back, or aren't we going to pay it back? So I guess that's what you have to weigh.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm curious to know the effect. There's obviously a lot of small rural schools on here, including a couple from my district. What effect would this have on their ability to issue their one-day bonds and continue in this program?
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, for those districts that choose not to repay the loans under the special legislation, which my guess is that all of the districts up your way will choose not to, their ability to issue one-day bonds would stay unchanged. So they would continue to be able to issue the one-day bonds in the same manner that they are currently doing so.
Representative Fabian? Representative Quam?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not having been around when in 2009 these changes that were made, you know, I from what I'm understanding, we had a system, some changes were made in 2009, and now we're trying to undo those changes. And I'd like to better understand that, but is the whole basis of this taconite in lieu of property taxes and
wrong
bill.
Vermont.
Representative Greiling.
Well,
thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, woke up. Got to start out again.
Me too.
Representative Quam.
Total debt service tax rates. Looking at that form, I'm trying to understand why some, because in Byron, we're above 30, and I'm trying to understand why some have X's. They're the ones that aren't planning to pay this back because they're in an area that was directly relational to some fund, or, you know, and is because Byron, as far as I know, has been paying principal and interest. So I'm trying to understand this.
Madam Chairman Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Quam, Byron looks like, going off the spreadsheet, your Byron borrowed their money in 1966 and paid it off already.
Representative Quam.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I concur with the statements of Representative Dabney, but Representative Quam, I'm glad you got ahead of me and got onto the right bill, because you kind of make the point that one of the points that I want to make. On this committee, we're always trying to figure out what's best for all kids and what's fair and what's equitable. And as soon as there is not enough money, then we go back to can I get something for my district? And I think this is a bill like that. Representative Garofalo, to his credit, was working on this with his school district before he was the chair, so he's not just working on it because he's the chair, so he can do it or may be able to do it. But it is truly not the right solution to this problem. The right solution is one I know Representative Garofalo also supports, but he won't be able to do it because it costs money, and that is fund the debt service equalization program. That is why we stopped doing these maximum effort loans, as Mr. Strom said, and went to a better program that works much better. And to our shame, that program is atrophied down into non-existence practically. So districts like the good superintendents that represent them, and Superintendent Meeks, I wish you well in your job quest. Any district that snaps you up will be so fortunate. So they're left here, you know, asking to have their loans forgiven for a bad program, you know, through no fault of their own, and we don't fund the one that would work for them. And I, whether this is a loan sharking program or a not paying on your, you know, your house is being foreclosed on, I would say, if I don't think we have any bankers in the legislature, they are probably way too smart to be in the legislature, unless they are retired. But if they were here, I wonder how many bankers would go for this. You know, I would love it if I had my home mortgage that I'm supposed to pay off over the next 30 or 40 years, and I got some legislation that said, I can pay off the principal next July 1st, and to heck with any of the interest. My husband and I figured after we'd paid for our first house, you know, for the first couple of years we owned the doorknob on the front door. And we would have loved this kind of deal. And the banks, we could have said, you know, you're going to get all of our principal payments right now. We're going to write out a check. And now we're going to own the rest of the house, and all we owed was the doorknob before. And we won't have to pay back the interest. I wonder if there's a banker in the world that would do anything but laugh their head off at us if we propose that. And members, that's the kind of bill we have here. Representative Quam, you mentioned Byron, I think, was it? And, you know, your district did pay off the interest. Don't you also represent Dover, Eota? Your district did pay off the interest. I don't know if you have Pine Island or not, but they paid off the interest. Represent Myra, you represent Burnsville, and you had to pay off the interest. But now we have the chair of the committee, and I suppose Representative Van Zels is going to be it for it too, because you have South Kuching, right? And Representative Fabian. This is another one of those bills where they want to get theirs. You know, we have Representative Dietrich wanted to get hers for Anoka for the concentration factor. Everybody wants to get theirs. Representative Depke is going to be up here saying, I, by the way, also not for no new taxes. I'm for no new taxes, but I want to get in on that alternative school facilities program that will cost money, but I would like to get mine. But members, I would remind us that we are here and we should try to be here for what is fair and equitable for the little bit of money that we have or the cuts we're going to make for all the children on a need-based formula that's fair for kids wherever they live. And I think if you change the rules in midstream, then Representative Myra and Representative Quam, their districts got screwed because they played by one set of rules and now we're going to change them for the districts that are here. We all know that Net Lake and Red Lake, we never expect them to pay anything back because they don't have any property wealth at all, the Native American reservations. And we do have to take that duty into heart and pay for those schools if we want those kids to have an education. But we also heard from Mr. Strom that Representative Grafflo's district and the others up there are likely to pay back their interest without this bill. So it seems to me, and this is a conclusion, Madam Chair, that Representative Dabney is right. The only way that this bill would even be considered without all that laughter, if we had any bankers here, is that it actually will contribute as a short-term fix $28 million this year that will allow Representative Grafflo's budget to have $28 million that's not cut. But my question then, and this is the last thing, Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow, how much money over time, I know that, let's say all the interest was paid back on the same date that the principal was paid back, for that $28 million, how much interest are we losing for the students of Minnesota?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Strom.
and members. If you look at the fiscal note, the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3, there's three columns. One is the original loan amount, and that's where the $28 million comes from. You can see on the top of page 3. Then there's a capitalized interest amount, which is the amount of interest that has accumulated since the beginning of the loan and has been added to the principal of the loan, and that's $41 million. And then there's accrued interest, which is the amount that has accrued this year and will continue to accrue annually at some rate, and that's $2 million. And that would grow because they're paying interest on the interest every year, because the interest gets capitalized every year, and there's compounding there unless they start paying them off, and then the interest amount might go down. But if the full interest were paid off right now at the time the loans were paid off, it would be an additional $43 million on top of the $28
million. Chairman Garofalo, you're next.
Madam Chair, and my friend from Roseville, you brought up a lot of points, but number one is you brought up an analogy. And we all know that analogies can be inaccurate, but no bank would issue a loan with the possibility of a provision in the contract saying you would never have to pay it back. So if that provision existed in the loan or the contract, my guess is the bank would say, we're not going to roll the dice, we're not going to gamble, we're going to take the money now. But it's a false analogy. It doesn't work out. And second of all, you know, you brought up the fact that it's, you know, Farmington is in the chairs district, and you accurately mentioned that you and I came to you before the election, mm-hmm. although we all knew that I knew I was going to be chair of this committee before the election. So, but this is, I do not write this as a Farmington-only bill. This is a statewide policy change that, yes, will benefit all regions of the state. It is a bad program. It is outdated. If the governor and the legislature don't want to do this, the existing school districts right now, they're going to be fine. They're not going to have to pay it back. But realize you are incentivizing them to spend more money to maintain their buildings and to spend more money so the money doesn't come up to the state of Minnesota. Because at least, and right now, districts are doing this. They're doing one-day bond sales, and they're marketing it. We had a bond referendum that passed with 99% of the vote, and the entire selling point to the community was, you're going to pay the money either way. Do you want it to go to the state, or do you want to keep the dollars local? Now, what do the voters do? They vote to keep it local. This is why the program, for all practical purposes, the eligibility requirements would have been abolished.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a question on the mechanics of this kind of program. We've talked about the 28% level. When you get above that 28% level, do you have the option of not making a payment, or you are forbidden from making a payment on this type of loan?
Chairman Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, when you're above 28%, you're above 28% because you're making payments on your principal and interest outside the capital loan. So that's where those dollars are going. You know, Farmington and these other districts are defeasing bonds as we speak.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Madam Chair. So then, if this were to pass, they would pay off the principal portion in one lump sum payment. Is that correct?
Chairman Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, yes.
Representative Anderson.
Well, thanks again, Madam Chair. So I guess the question is, where would that additional money come from to pay off that principal amount?
Chairman Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, that would be up to the local school districts to decide.
All right. Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The author has articulated what I wanted to say much better than I could have. Thank you. I pass.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. question for staff on the incentives in this program. The Chair has gone to that a number of times. Because of the 28% level above which you don't have to pay off the money you borrowed, does that incent schools to build bigger, nicer buildings through this program? I taught in Buffalo for 17 years, so I used to drive through cornfields to get to work, and it's not cornfields anymore, but there's some lovely, big, very nice, well-appointed school buildings in that district. And I'm wondering, in the St. Michael Albertville School District, and I'm wondering if the structure of this program incented them to build up and incur more expenses so that their
payments were larger and came under the over the 28% threshold.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, the individual districts may want to address this as well, but in this maximum effort capital loan statute, there's a list of criteria that need to be made and met before the state signs off on those. And essentially, one of those criteria is that the buildings are comparable to neighboring districts. There's also a list of certain kinds of facilities that can't be built with maximum effort loans, like stadiums, for example. So I think the general answer to your question is most of the school districts that received maximum effort loans will have nicer facilities than they would have had they relied solely on their local tax base. But generally speaking, they're not going to have the nicest facilities in the state. Now, timings-wise, some of these districts didn't have many school buildings before, so they may have relatively new school buildings, and those buildings may look a fair amount nicer than a district next door that has very old school buildings. But in general, I'd say the statutory language that determines what goes into the review and comment for the facility would mean that there aren't any substantial differences between how those buildings look and how, if the neighboring district were to build a new school building, how that building would look.
Thank you.
Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, just to Representative Greiling's doorknob and the rest of the House, I'd remind you that for about 15, 20 years in Minnesota, it was legal for a mortgage to be written with an explicit clause prohibiting early repayment. So homeowners would not be able to do what Representative Garofalo wants school districts to be allowed to do. And that only changed, if I recall correctly, in 2007 when we changed some of the predatory lending legislation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
If there, Madam Chair, believe me, yes, we have nice buildings, but the few in the 35-mile whole total square that we have for people living, they're paying. And we did not build extra. I think if any of you would like to come and tour, they're very nice building, but they're probably the most functional buildings that I would show you in anything recently built, because our taxpayers said we're not paying for anything. Extra foo-foo, nothing. Our high school is gorgeous. We built it along with three others in the same time period, and there was a Star Tribune article about this about a year ago. Ours came in almost $20 million less than the other three in the metro. Now, it's not all apples to apples, and I wouldn't lead you down that path, because some of them built football stadiums and things with it that we did not build, because we didn't rebuild a football stadium on our present campus. So the point is, this was back when St. Michael Albertville was extremely a small district. 2000, we have built a brand new middle school, two elementaries, a high school, and put two additions on. Not because we wanted to go out and spend money, not because we wanted to go and be a person that had the higher buck home and all these home analogies. And by the way, my husband is a retired banker. Not because any of those reasons. And you know, the assumption is that I have never met this man until a few minutes ago. So he wasn't doing our district a big favor because of anything. It just makes sense. The way the program was set up, I really feel it misled people in education out there, school boards, and thinking, yep, we can do this and never have to pay it back. So who cares that, you know, my husband said he'd love to have that interest rate that the state's charging us. I mean, my gosh, if you look at my sheets, I'd love to be able to get out of this because I could get something a lot less out there in interest. The whole assumption of that, and then now we went and built all the schools because that's when the growth happened in 2000, not because we were trying to get forgiveness of the loan, not to be underhanded. Again, I've got the fields, as you well know, ready to build again, and so you're assuming you're going to get all these extra millions of dollars at this high interest rate. Maybe not. You know, we might start filling up all those fields that you drove through, and then we'll be up where we're within that bill, and we won't be paying a nickel back. So it is kind of rolling the dice. It is, as I first stated, an opportunity for us. Yes, And as Representative Greiling, I've been to many C meetings, and that we are one of the lowest on the C people. Brad's still here. So we're not a big influx of money and be able to do anything. We pay 3 and 5 times more for our operating levies, if we can pass them, than our neighbors. So I guess, yeah, we are poor, and we're here just saying this makes sense. It gives money to the state at this time. It makes sense for us because the interest rate alone is crazy. Maybe you will get it in 2041. You know, maybe you won't. I couldn't make that promise, and I wouldn't. But I think we're here just to say it's you were all talking about what makes sense and not trying to be something individual for one school or not. We're not giving any other school district a problem by doing this. It's not going to affect anybody else.
Thank you, Ms. Ziegler. Representative Greiling.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I am sympathetic with the C districts, which is why I had the debt equalization be fully funded in the new Minnesota Miracle. And that's, I know C strongly supported that bill. And that's what we should be doing here. That would be fair to you and everybody else, and money well spent. But this does affect other school districts. We get $28 million this year, and Mr. Crow just told us we're forfeiting $71 million today and growing. So I don't think it's fair to the districts that paid back, and now some don't want to pay back, and they're saying they're poor and they need it, and we all know that's true for them and many other districts around the state. And Representative Garofalo, of course this isn't similar to a bank loan, because no bank would have negotiated this sort of a thing. But that was part of the deal. You know, school districts could pay as able, but by the way, if you're slow about it to incent paying it back, you have a high interest, so that might be some incentive. But if we're going to have districts gaming the state, which it sounds like they're forced to do, I always have sympathy with what school districts, what contortions they have to go through to make do with the fact that we're not doing our job to fund your schools properly. So I am not in any way criticizing you for being creative with this bill and trying to get anything, something passed. I have nothing but sympathy for you. But I would say, Representative Garofalo, if you're going to go forward with this bill, and I don't know what the governor thinks about it or what the Senate thinks about it, I don't think you have a Senate author, I would urge you to think of, instead of this, let us off the hook, we're not paying any interest. Could you look at a renegotiated loan? Talk with your banker husband, who might say, what is a fair interest rate? And, you know, Representative Davney never tried to have people lose their homes. He was working on legislation to renegotiate, educate, and then also, by the way, have better mortgage contracts in the first place. So if this doesn't work, we should be changing the law, ideally going to debt service equalization and get rid of this. But then for the short term, while we're grandfathering this out, I don't think paying any interest, which is $71 million for all students, is a good enough for the other students. And I would say we should renegotiate the loan, come up with something middle ground, because there is a problem here. But I think this is an extreme solution and not fair to the rest of the kids around the state, and especially the districts who did pay back their interest, represented by two good legislators here at the table, Representative Quam and Representative Myra.
Seeing no other questions.
If I could just a follow-up comment.
Mr. Meeks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in reference to the comments about whether we do bond referendums and also have part of the subplot that we're doing that to make sure we don't have to pay the capital loan back. I know in my time in Farmington that's not been the case. I just want to assure the committee that that's not been a conversation to have. To issue hundreds of millions of dollars of bond debt to simply avoid paying the capital loan back, that is not our motivation. We're simply bringing this together with good intentions. We felt that it was worthy of consideration by the state in repayment of some debt that may or may not be paid back at some time in the future, and we feel that it's beneficial to the constituents in our district as well to pay off this debt.
Thank you, Mr. Meeks. Seeing no other questions, Chairman Garofalo, would you like to make some closing comments?
No, I thank members for the discussion today, and again, if there's opposition to this and people don't want to do this, that's fine. We don't have to do it. It's It's a win-win for the state and for local districts, but if the governor's office is opposed to it, or if the Senate doesn't want to do it, that's fine too. I just thought it was a good idea.
My apologies. I didn't notice Representative Anderson would like to make one more comment.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Just a slight clarification on this. We wouldn't be giving away or forgiving $71 million. The interest amount forgiven here would be $43. And then one last thing. If we could take in $28 million today, there's also the value of money. And if this wouldn't be paid back in total for 30 years, and you figure like a 3% inflation rate per year, for 30 years, roughly, that's like 90% inflation on this money. So it isn't really all that bad in terms of looking at the dollars today and looking at inflation over 30 years. As a farmer, you look at some of these cash things over time, when you look at the inflation factor, it's not as bad as giving away $43 million today and not getting anything down the road.
Madam Chair, I renew my motion to have House File 782 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, why don't we have Representative Depke go? Because I'm going to be if we're not able to get done by 2:15, I'm going to be here tonight. I don't want to make her stick around. So why don't we go with
certainly.
Her?
Certainly. Representative Depke, I move House File 254 be laid over for possible inclusion in a future bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am presenting to you today. It's House File 254, and this is regarding alternative facilities. This is relating to this Wayzata School District. The bill is essentially proposing early eligibility into the alternative facilities program for the Wayzata schools. And it will have a fiscal impact of $0 on both the local property tax and the statewide revenues. I believe you might have an old fiscal note in your packet that indicates that the dollars are different, but Mr. Crow is here to testify to the fact that it will have a zero impact. I also have two testifiers with me today. On my right is Superintendent Chase Anderson, who is the superintendent of the Wayzata Schools, and then we have Jim Westrom, who is the director of finance for the Wayzata Schools as well. So I would like first, Madam Chair, if that's all right, to have Mr. Crow speak to the fiscal impact.
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, as Representative Depke noted, you'll see a fiscal note in your packet that shows a $1.5 million shift cost of this bill. The school district has clarified that they would be using the pay-as-you-go alternative facilities program, which is a shiftable levy, and so there is a revised fiscal note that's basically done. It just hasn't been signed off on that shows a zero state cost and a zero local levy cost.
Representative Depke.
Thank you, Mr. Crow. And now I would like to turn the meeting over to my two gentlemen that are here today from the Wayzata Schools, and we will go to Superintendent Anderson first.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My name is Chase Anderson. I'm superintendent with Wayzata Public Schools. I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair and members, for giving us this opportunity to present today. I also would like to thank Representative Depke for introducing this bill and for inviting us to be here today. As you know, House File 254 would allow Wayzata Public Schools to qualify early for the state's Alternative Facilities Bonding and Levy Program. To qualify for the program, districts must have over 1.85 million square feet of building space and an average of 15 years or older, or 1.5 million square feet of space and an average age of 35 years or older. Wayzata has approximately 1.65 million square feet of building space and a current average of about 31 years. Like other districts that have sought and been granted this early eligibility, we also are seeking the same eligibility into the program for the following four reasons. First, today's economy presents a tremendous opportunity for the district. Interest rates and construction costs are extremely low, which would allow the district to complete pending projects at a lower cost. This translates into direct savings to our taxpayers through lower property tax levies if the projects are completed in the next 1 to 3 years when these prices and interest rates remain competitive. The cost of these projects will likely increase within the next 5 years, which will result in higher taxes for our residents if we do not become eligible prior to the expiration of that 5-year time period. Second, there's no financial impact for the state in this legislation. The funds for Wayzata's participation in this program would come entirely from the local levy. There's no cost to the state or no increase in state aid to fund this proposed legislation. There was a fiscal note, as I think you just heard, attached to this bill that showed a cost to the state of about $1.5 million for fiscal year 2012. This was not a direct cost to the state, but a reduction in the amount of the state could withhold from the district because of the 48.6% property tax recognition shift enacted by the 2010 legislature. To eliminate the impact of the fiscal note, the district plans to implement a pay-as-you-go strategy rather than selling bonds. This change will still allow the district to qualify for the program and it will eliminate the cost to the state. Third, we are currently using a small portion of our general fund budget to cover the cost of annual operating capital expenditures. The ability to assess alternative facilities funds will free up dollars in the general fund and allow our district to more effectively manage its budget during these challenging financial times. Finally, and most importantly, Wayzata's participation in the Alternative Facilities Program would not increase property taxes for local residents. Our district currently levies about $3.2 million annually for health and safety and deferred maintenance projects. We would simply shift this amount to pay for the alternative facilities projects and not levy any additional tax burden on our residents. The cost to local taxpayers would be the same as it currently is, and we would be able to accelerate repair and maintenance projects in this more favorable economic environment. We believe that passage of House File 254 will represent a win-win situation for our district and our community. We will be able to repair and maintain our facilities that are currently being deferred until we become eligible in 5 years, and we'll be able to do it without increasing local taxes. Again, we greatly appreciate the opportunity to be here and to present this information to you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Westrum, can you introduce yourself and spell your name, please?
Sure. My name is Jim Westrum, W-E-S-T-R-U-M, Director of Finance with the Wayzata Public Schools. And the only comment I have is that anytime that we can look at a way to be more efficient or provide taxpayer savings, we always are exploring those opportunities, and we appreciate the fact that Representative Depke is bringing forth this bill for your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Representative Breinhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Depke, my question is more around why do this for one school? Are there other schools that would benefit equally through this change, and should we look at a structural change to either the age limit, or given that many school districts would benefit by the economic value of investing at this time with low interest rates and so forth? So,
Representative Depke.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Reiner, thank you for that question. It's a good one. I'm going to have Mr. Westrum answer that.
Mr. Westrum.
Thank you. Actually, you're correct in your statement that that would be good for all districts. Currently, we are the only district that exceeds 1.5 million square feet in the actual school district that hasn't already sought special legislation or become eligible through the current legislation as it's stated. So at this point, we are aware that there may be a fiscal impact, and I would defer that to the financial people on your team. But at this point, we wanted to make sure that it was a $0 impact to the state. Thank you.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I compliment you for asking to be in this program. I have helped with three of my now two school districts, one I had before redistricting, get into this program. It is a marvelous program. And in the new Minnesota Miracle, we got rid of it, though, and had this opportunity for all districts. It isn't fair, any of you from the small districts. I have one small district now, St. Anthony, New Brighton, so they don't qualify. And there isn't a single non-metro district in here, Representative Fabian. Did you notice that? you campaigned on fair and equitable distribution. Well, this is not for your districts. This is only for the large metro districts and Representative Quam and others. So while I myself would support Wayzata getting in here because you do qualify and you're no lesser than my districts that qualify than are in here, so I would support your bill, especially if it's pay-as-you-go. But I just will say, members, this isn't a fair program because all districts have facilities needs, and this is a nice benefit for the large metro districts. My question is for the fiscal staff. If we offered this, why is it that Wayzata is able to have this be a zero cost? What if Roseau wanted to do it? What would that cost? Or why can't they just ask for a bill with no cost?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greiling. The issue with the Wayzata School District has to do with the levies that they'll discontinue in the short term and replace with an alternative facilities levy. So there's no impact at the local level. And the initial fiscal note presumed that they were going to shift some levies from shiftable categories to non-shiftable by issuing debt. The Wayzata School District testified that they are not going to pursue the debt option in the next several years. So as a result, there's no shift savings lost either. So essentially, the reason there's no levy cost for the Wayzata School District is that they've pledged that they won't they'll lower other levies that they would otherwise be levying in that category for the next several years. So another district, in order to meet that same criteria, would have to make that similar pledge that they would not be using their health and safety levy or other levies for those purposes and instead rely only on the alternative facilities.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, would there be a cost for the state if Representative Fabian's school district in Roseau wanted to come into this?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, there would not be a cost if they were all levy in the sense of an appropriation, but if those levies went from a shiftable to a non-shiftable category, there would be an impact on the state budget. Presuming there weren't, then it would simply be a local levy increase in the district. There's a very small amount of property tax refund money associated with that this committee does not carry the costs of. But aside from that, there would be no state cost to allowing a different district into the program.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Madam Chair, again, I do support this bill. I think Representative Depke's right to ask for it, but we all are duty-bound to come up with a better program that's fair for districts all around the state and their students.
This is a public meeting. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify in favor or against this bill? Okay. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greiling, thank you very much for looking out. I'm sure you're going to have ample opportunity in the future to address the needs of small schools. Appreciate that.
Madam Chair. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fabian, I mentioned after you were kind of hostile to me a couple days ago, as if I were not for rural schools, that we would have to talk, and I want you to please call my office or I'll call yours and we can sit down and talk about the new Minnesota miracle that I have championed, and it's actually better for greater Minnesota schools in terms of increased revenue than metro schools. I have always been a statewide legislator in terms of school funding, and if push comes to shove and we're going to screw some districts, I'll fight for my districts the same as you would, but I have always fought for all the districts.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Greiling, I think you don't know me well enough to know when I'm actually hostile.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Miss Madam Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Representative Fabian, ditto.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do appreciate that you're basically, if you averaged criteria A and criteria B, you know, that's where you're sitting, and then you meet half of A, half of B, but you don't quite fit. So I do have sympathy there, and I think it's reasonable that you're seeking this. I do have concerns about trying to expand not going to the voters. And while I can support this because you're really meeting the intent of the existing law, I really have reservations about, beyond this, further expanding the restriction of going to voters for money.
Representative Depke.
Are you asking me to summarize or to...
You are. I see no other questions. You're welcome to conclude.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to be in front of the Education Finance Committee. Believe it or not, I miss you guys. Although I'm not too sure after the last couple of hours. But I appreciate your accommodating this bill and for including it in possible layover in the omnibus bill. And it does have a Senate companion that has also been heard. So thank you very much.
Representative Debke, I renew your motion to lay this over for possible inclusion in another bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Now we will hear... I move House File 308 for Chairman Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House File 308 for possible inclusion in a later bill. And I would request that Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow run through the history of the Taconite General Education Aid.
Mr. Strom, Mr. Crow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, there is a bill summary of this bill in your packets. It's probably helpful for you to read the overview on the bill summary. And let me set a little of the legislative history in the last few years on this provision. Essentially, the taconite industry is exempt from local property taxes and pays a whole series of other taxes instead. When it comes to school districts, the primary one of importance is the production tax, which is a cents per ton tax. The distribution of that tax is split amongst the various groups of municipalities on the Iron Range. Some of the money goes for direct property tax relief, some goes to cities, some goes to townships, some goes to the school districts. Essentially what happens, there's four or five major school district programs that use taconite money, and one of those had its parameters altered in the 2009 legislative session. That program is one where there's a reduction, and it's roughly about half of the taconite money that school district receives. That money is distributed to the 15 school districts in the taconite relief area, and essentially that program is a levy reduction program. So the money that's in that portion of the taconite funds is used to reduce school district levies in those 15 school districts. There's a pretty complicated formula as to how the money goes into those funds. There's different cents per ton in two different categories. There's a bit of the grandfathered taconite railroad tax in that fund as well, and then there's some modifications to that base. But essentially what happened in 2009 is that the legislature changed what would happen if there were excess money in that fund. Prior to 2009, if there was money remaining in the fund after the local levies had been bought down according to the amount specified in statute, then general education aid was reduced by the remainder in that pot. So, for example, if the levy total were about $8 million for those school districts and that portion of the production tax and other taxes assigned to that pot raised $9 million, that additional $1 million would have come off of general education aid and reduced general education aid. The change in 2009 said instead of that reduction coming off general education aid, that money should be reallocated amongst the other taconite school or the other cities and towns in the taconite area and used for tax relief and other purposes in those areas. For the years that were affected by that 10, 11, 12, and 13, relatively very little change on the state revenue because of that, because of the relatively lower amounts of the production tax in the years that that's assigned to. For years beginning in 2014 and on, those amounts will increase fairly substantially again, and the fiscal note will point out these relative amounts of money. So what House File 308 does is it takes that language back to its status prior to 2009 so that if there's a surplus in that fund or an excess in that portion of the fund, that excess gets offset against general education aid and is therefore state aid savings rather than being reallocated to the cities and towns in the taconite relief area.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Chairman Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. And the first thing I have to say is I'll begin the same way as when I presented this bill last year, is I want to apologize to the committee because I feel like I have some level of responsibility for this becoming law. I pride myself on reading bills, particularly omnibus tax bills, and when this came to the floor, it was marketed to us, all members of the body, majority, minority, as non-controversial legislation. And I had read through all the articles of the bill until the last one, and I did not read the last article of the bill, just trusting that it was non-controversial, and after session found out now that this provision was in there. And this provision never once made a stop in the Education Finance Committee nor the Education Reform Committee. This is just one of those jurisdictional issues where our good friends in the Tax Committee got what they wanted. And so I never liked it. I thought it was a bad idea, and it's an important discussion we have, that the net effect of this policy change was that we increased the state appropriation to education, but those dollars did not flow to schools. In fact, they provided what I call a backdoor LGA increase to certain communities. Mm-hmm. I didn't like it then, I don't like it now, and I won't like it in the future. That's the reason why I'm authoring this, and I'm happy to have a discussion with members of the committee about it.
Representative Garofalo, do you have any testifiers?
I do not.
All right. This is a public meeting. Is there anyone who would like to testify in favor or against this bill? Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, Representative Garofalo, I know you like kids, and I know you like kids on the Iron Range just as much as you like kids in Farmington or Rockford or Maple Lake or Chaska, but it really does shock me that you would go to this end with this legislation to affect negatively the educations of youngsters in 16 school districts located in the Taconite Relief Area. And I know you don't mean to do it. And I suspect this is more about jurisdiction and tax policy and whatever involving your role as the very capable chair of this committee. Members, 6 taconite plants in northeastern Minnesota pay $2.37 on every ton of taconite that they produce. And every ton of taconite that they produce in Section 16 and 36, you get a portion of. We share our mineral wealth with you. Now, the 16 school districts and the kids in those districts that would be affected by Representative Garofalo's bill, on average, depending upon production, depending upon how the 3-year averaging works and the computation of taxes, the kids in these 16 districts get somewhere between 15 cents and 23 cents per ton of taconite paid for their education. It's minuscule. And what was done in 2009 was done to allow production tax money, taconite production tax money, which is in lieu of, in place of, property taxes, to give an opportunity for those dollars to stay on the Iron Range, to give an opportunity for municipalities and townships in the taconite relief area to have those few pennies. This would be like if in your district, Representative Greiling, legislation were introduced to use for another purpose or return to the general fund a portion of the property taxes, basically a third, a third, a third, schools, municipalities, and the county. That third that would go to the Roseville School District that we would be tinkering with the amount of money that goes to your district. The three-year averaging in computing taconite production taxes is necessary because of the cyclical nature of the iron and steel industry.
Representative Ensels, do you have a question?
And 09 was a particularly bad year. And so it was the averaging that resulted in this excess. Please let us keep our money, Representative Garofalo. Please reconsider this.
Chairman Garofalo, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Madam Chair and Representative Ensels, it's Ash Wednesday, and so I'll be nice. And I like you, and I like kids, and I like Iron Range kids. But this bill has nothing to do with kids. This does not impact one nickel the amount of money that goes into the schools that are affected by this bill. It does not impact it one bit. Who it does impact is it impacts the cities who used the education bill to provide a sneaky little trick, a little way to get extra money into their cities. Now, I like you, Representative Ensels, so I'm not going to have this committee vote on this bill today, and I'm not going to roll call it, because I'm pretty sure that everyone agrees with me on it. I'm not going to speak for everybody, but we should not be using the education bill to be giving super secret LGA increases to certain communities. That's why I'm offering this. It should have went through the Education Finance Committee back in 2009. It didn't. Members weren't told about it. And again, I share the blame for that because I voted on that bill just like every other member of the legislature.
Representative Ensels. Representative Ward.
Well, thank you for, Madam Chair. Representative Groffel, can you just tell us, I just noticed that Crosby Arrington is on there, so and you and Representative Zelk had a lively discussion, and can you tell us, though, how much money are you talking about that doesn't go to cities of Crosby or Arrington, because the cities of Crosby and Arrington are in an economic downturn spin here that is just in the Brainerd Daily Dispatch this morning. We still continue to have some of the highest unemployment rate in the state of Minnesota, and our cities and our townships and those local governments that so desperately need any kind of help are in dire straits. So how much money are we talking to the cities and the towns, Representative Garofalo?
Chairman Garofalo?
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, I would defer to staff, but I believe the answer to the question is whatever the numbers are you see in the fiscal note. But the important point, Representative Ward, is you make a case for increased assistance to cities. That's what should happen through the LGA appropriation. That's what should happen through the tax budget. It doesn't happen in the Education Finance Committee. We don't give assistance to cities using the education finance appropriations of the state. Mm-hmm. So I'll defer to staff. I believe the numbers you see in the fiscal note are where those amounts would end up.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, yes, if you turn to page 4 of the fiscal note, middle of the page has a total net savings general education. At that line, you can read both ways, either as the net savings to the state in general education aid, or now with the current laws, the net loss in revenue to the cities and towns in the taconite relief area.
Thank you. I see that we have a testifier. Please come to the table and state your name.
Madam Chair, my name is Ron Dicklich, and I'm the Executive Director of the Range Association of Municipalities and Schools. And although Representative Groffel's analogy or how he lays this out is quite interesting, the truth of the matter is I was in the tax conference committee when this happened. And originally, Senator Bach, who was chair of the Senate Tax Conference Committee, had wanted to keep all of the money in the schools because of the certain situations our school districts are in, where because of the mining, which Representative Ensels so eloquently lays out, allows us to take in some taconite tax, but also provide tens of millions of dollars to the school trust fund. Our school buildings and facilities take a beating. And so Senator Bach was trying to keep just a few more dollars in the schools so that they could deal with those issues. Chair Luchesky of the House said first of all, she argued a long time not to let it happen, but she said, well, you know what, Representative Greiling, chair of the Education Committee, wouldn't like us adding money to a school fund formula that she deals with, so I will not allow you to add this money to the school district, but rather maybe redistribute it to the cities and townships in those school districts that this would affect. So it wasn't the tax committee trying to make education policy. At the end of the day, it was that Senator Bach was trying to keep a few extra bucks in to deal with these extraneous issues with the physical, what physically happens to our buildings up there because of the mining and the blasting and everything else. And then Representative Lachinsky says, no, I won't let you keep it in the school fund, but you can redistribute it. It had nothing to do with what was going on with the LG, because Mr. Strum, I think what was the first year was like, what, $160,000, and the next year was $300,000? Was that what the total impact of this was that got redistributed to 25 cities?
Yeah.
Mr. Strum?
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo and former Senator Dicklich, yes, the amounts actually were, the estimate was that large, but the amounts actually went to zero because of that three-year averaging in the fall and the taconite revenue. So for two of the 3 years that it was at zero. The expectation now is that this will improve beginning in payable 13 back up to $135,000, in pay 14 up to $982,000, and then in payable 15 to $1.7 million.
And okay, Madam Chair, so if I'm understanding the testimony right here, then if I were to offer a bill that took this money from the cities and gave it to the schools up there, you'd support it?
Yeah.
You're okay with that?
Absolutely.
Peace in the valley, Madam Chair.
It's kind of a podium epiphany, but yeah, Madam Chair,
Representative Enzels.
just a little bit of caution here. Chairman Garofalo, you've been to the Iron Range. You know the condition of our public buildings. We are poor. We are small and getting smaller. Our school districts are all facing declining enrollment. We are struggling, as much of Greater Minnesota is struggling. But our struggle is particularly frustrating because we have no tax base, we have all public land, and our only commercial industrial taxpayer pays no property taxes. Chairman Garofalo, these are pennies here. Literally pennies. Let the pennies stay where the taconite is mined. Let us keep our money.
Chairman Garofalo, I would like to seek your advice. We're getting to 2:15.
I think we're just about done.
All right.
Comment.
Madam Chair, just one last. And as has been pointed out, these taxes are based on a three-year average. So we went from 38 million tons, 39 million tons, 38 million tons. And you average that, and it gets close to 38 million tons times the 223. Well, then we had a 17 million ton year, which brings them down for 3 years. And so as we speak, talking of the industry, the price of steel is starting to come down again. So by 2015, the estimate Mr. Strum gives is based on going back to 38 or 39 million tons. But that could end any minute, because the steel industry is up and down all the time.
Thank you. Representative Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a couple of comments here. One thing, when we talk about the mining industry, and we talk about sections 16 and 36 of the school trust lands, and that money gets distributed to all the kids in the state. We do appreciate the fact that the Iron Range has maintained their lands. And if you look at a map of school trust lands, that 16 and 36, you'll notice that everybody else in the state has had the luxury of selling their school trust lands. And once they sell them, they can put a power plant, a business, a Hutchinson Technologies, and they can gather property taxes off of that. And that helps the local taxpayers pass referendums, pay for their own schools locally. So the mining situation is unique in that way, is they don't pay property taxes I don't know that I ever have totally understood that and why, but it just it doesn't make sense to me. But I do know also with working with the school trust lands is taking that mining tax and then putting it into the general fund is no incentive for anybody to ever be more productive because it's a gets to be black hole type syndrome. So that money being distributed to the local community, I guess I can I would equate it instead of more an LGA, Mr. Chairman, I would call it more like fiscal disparities. And I don't so I don't know that I would necessarily say that it's a one big LGA payment. It is really trying to take the property wealth of the whole state or the whole surrounding area and trying to redistribute it. And they hold an asset, and they manage that asset, and they hold it in lieu in trust for the kids, Section 16 and 36, and the rest of it is strictly, you know, in my opinion, a community asset. So I just wanted to make that comment. Thank you.
Madam Chair, thank you, Representative Dietrich. We have no other...
We have one more. The last question goes to Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since this is in lieu of property taxes, I'd be okay with the range keeping it if you're okay with my district keeping all of our property taxes that we pay and using them in our district. So we could maybe get together and do a bill. Otherwise, you know, I think it points mute.
Chairman Garofalo.
I renew my motion to have House File 308 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill. And, Madam Chair, I just have a question. Was there an amendment to my capital loan bill that I did not move? There was not. Okay, I just want to make sure I see that. So, Madam Chair, that's all I have. Thank you. Great job running the committee.
Oh, we are adjourned.